RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
Oh, hey. I'm sorry. I was working on some little unfinished business I have here. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm Josh.
And you've discovered a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. So as I think he already has done, Josh is going to tell us what we're going to cover this week. Josh?
This week, we are going to talk about an episode called, oh, look at that, Unfinished Business.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, nice. This is season one, episode 19. So it was originally aired on April 3rd of 2013. So let me tell you a little bit about this episode. So right at the beginning, after a woman that's on Vertigo is at Oliver's nightclub, okay, she gets hit by a car in a very graphic car hitting scene there.
Yeah.
And after the police investigate this, it leads them back to the club where she was and back to Tommy, who she had texted right before. Oliver is determined to stop this flow of vertigo in Starling City. So he starts tracking the drug and finds out who has discovered the recipe for this, because he had assumed once he had stopped the count, nobody else knew how to make it. The police discover that there's $10,000 missing from the nightclub's books, and Detective Lance is starting to suspect Tommy Merlin of being involved in the Vertigo's distribution, possibly, you know, through the club. And after hearing the evidence, Oliver starts to have his suspicions about Tommy too. So it gets pretty nasty between all those guys. Meanwhile, Diggle is struggling, you know, with having Deadshot on the loose. So he is trying his best to track him down, and he elicits the help of an old army friend of his named Lila. This is kind of interesting. And in a flashback on the island, Shadow, who's now with Slade and Oliver, she's trying to train Oliver by having him do some water slapping.
Is that a euphemism?
Why? I don't know. Maybe. It's also very literal too. So he's doing a little water slapping dance there that she explains what that's for at the end. So
all right, Josh, I want you to try to snatch the pebble from my hand. When you've been able to do that successfully, you will move on.
So. Well, maybe if you'd stop closing your hand, hold still.
Yeah. Moving all over the place.
I got to go find some, you know, flies so I can catch them with my
chopsticks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get into some of the discussion topics, I just wanted to go over some interesting news we've got here. There was a great article posted after WonderCon. There was a ton of information about WonderCon, and if you haven't been looking at our Facebook page, we've been posting different videos that were shot with the staff and cast from Arrow, from WonderCon, which is an Anaheim, California-based comic show that's it's become more and more popular. It's a great show right near Disneyland, so that it's more convenient for people to get to. But
it seemed really, really big this year. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on in a lot of different franchises.
It's getting bigger the way that, like, San Diego Comic-Con had gotten. It used to just, you know, be a comic show, and now it's starting to be a comic and entertainment show. So
Yeah. And there was a lot of Arrow news down there. So
So Mark Guggenheim, who's a comic book writer, but he's also the executive producer of Arrow, was talking about some of the things that were coming up in the show, which we're not going to discuss right now. But he also was talking about this article. He talks about what's great about the comic books and why the show differs from the comic books a little bit, why he thinks that the comic books are, you know, going through their third set of artists and writers right now, and what, you know, differentiates the show and why the show has been so successful. He said things like, you know, what we've talked about with the realism of the show, that he said they've avoided using the silly arrows. You know, that was kind of a staple. But I still think they're going to do some homages to that at some point.
I think so, too. As a matter of fact, we've seen a little bit of it, but...
A little bit of that on this episode, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be another potential bird-based character coming to the show, kind of an ex-Robin, if people or readers of DC Comics might know where that would be heading. So there's a little talk about that in this article. Plus, he teases another... He asks a very interesting question about another character here. And, you know, just goes over, like, kind of what he'd like to do and his plan for, you know, laying it out for, you know, five seasons, really. That's kind of the goal, I think, that he's got for the show. So I hope they're able to pull that off, because it seems like he's setting up arcs to do that. And in one of the video interviews, he talks about ideas they've had for the fourth or fifth season.
I am just so pleased with how knowledgeable they are of the comics and how much they're tying it into ideas from the comics. So just once again, more evidence of that.
Right. He's very he's a huge fan of the comics, and like I said, he's actually written comics as well. He's got a couple of the executive producers have comic writing credits for DC characters on their. On their resumes, so that's really cool. So, if you're interested in reading that, go check out the WonderCon 13 coverage over at CBR Comic Book Resources, and it's Guggenheim on Arrow and the Failure of Comic Oliver Queen.
So. Yeah, and I'm going to remind you this later in the show too, but please check out our Facebook page, because we try to put links to things when we find them too. So, you know, I really encourage you guys to go to our Facebook page and check those things out and make some comments and enjoy some of the things that we found to post up there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. In other news this week, while not specifically Arrow-related, DC writer and artist Carmine Infantino passed away. He was 87 years old, and he's best known as the creator of The Flash, which I know, Josh, you're a huge fan of.
Yes, I love The Flash. Love The Flash. All different versions of The Flash, actually, even back way with Barry Allen. So.
Yeah, so Infantino actually helped create Barry Allen, and he also helped create Wally West, who is the one of the more modern or recent incarnations of The Flash, as well as the Elongated Man, Barbara Gordon, Adam Strange, and Dead Man. He was also an executive director at DC for a while, and he ushered in the revitalization of the company in the 70s, bringing in creators such as Jack Kirby, who did a lot of stuff with the New Gods, as well as Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams, who we've talked about before, two of the creators that revitalized Green Arrow in the 70s as well. And also for myself, and I don't know how much you were into these, but the Star Wars comics that came out in the late 70s, Infantino did a number of the early issues right after the movie adaptation as well.
Well, I was, needless to say, I was very, very into the Star Wars comics, and I'm a big fan of a lot of stuff that he did. So that's sad news about a legend, you know.
Yeah, you know, you've got all these guys that create, you know, I mean, Stan Lee is one that sticks in my mind. He's still kicking it at
amazingly
88, I think, is what I looked at. And but you know, all these guys that were doing this great work in the 50s and 60s now are, you know, they're just really getting up there. And so, you know, unfortunately, we're going to be losing them. So while Infantino didn't do anything specifically on a Green Arrow book, he did you know, work a lot with DC Comics and help revitalize some of their characters, Green Arrow being one of those.
Yeah.
And then also something else that had come out of WonderCon was what they call a sizzle reel. This is basically a trailer for the last quarter of the Arrow season one. It includes some shots from the episode we're discussing this week, episode 19. But it's got a lot of other cool teases about what's coming in the next, what have we got, 4 episodes left, I guess. So we are not going to talk about that now, but that will be in our spoiler section. So if you are interested in hearing what they talk about in the sizzle reel or what is shown in the sizzle reel. Stay tuned after the end credits.
Yes, and then go watch it because it is definitely sizzlicious.
Sizzlicious, exactly. All right, so discussing unfinished business this week. First appearances, as you mentioned, there is a new character who may or may not be showing up further called Lila. And she is an old friend of Diggle's from Army Intelligence. And he meets with her to kind of trade information. She seems to kind of know what he's been up to. And surprisingly, he's got more information than her. He's trying to find out some information about Deadshot. He knows some things that Oliver and Felicity have helped find out that even Army Intelligence doesn't appear to know. So they kind of trade information there. So, I'm assuming that she may be a... If this character returns, I guess, Josh, that she'll be a kind of a liaison to something more. And there's a little bit of discussion we can get into in our references section below about who else who this character might be and what her ties are. But I don't know. Do you see any future for her on the show, or do you think this was just kind of a one-shot appearance?
You know, I can't imagine that they would bring a character like that in and not use her again. I mean, she was only on screen for, minute and a half, something like that, right? While she was talking to Diggle.
Short scene, yeah.
First of all, it's a woman, which, you know, I don't certainly have a problem with, but that's not your typical character design, I guess, that you would bring in and then just throw away and not use again. I mean, they would just bring, you know, some random government guy in if they were going to do that. Plus, it's somebody that is possibly connected to the comics. So I wouldn't think that they would bring somebody like that in and just toss them away. I think that probably she'll show up again.
Okay. Well, and she obviously has some backstory with Diggle. So I think also because she's a woman, it doesn't appear that there's any kind of attraction between the two of them, obviously.
Diggle's, oh, I don't know.
You
she
think
said
so?
Something. Yeah, right at the beginning when they met. Hey, thanks for calling me in town. Yeah, that's not why I called you. Oh.
Oh.
There was kind of a little interaction that kind of implied there might have been something in the past with them.
Okay, I missed that. But, I was going to say, because it seems like Diggle's, really involved with Carly right now. But, this is great because it's another character that's got potential, potential love interest and interaction with Diggle to allow his character to grow.
Yeah, which I think it did in this episode. We saw a little bit development in him. So
I loved he goes to buy the Vertigo for Oliver. And yeah. He's like, all right, there you go. The token black man has bought the man of color has bought the drugs now.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of good one-liners.
Yes, there was.
So, well, up to this point, so for the past 18 episodes, I think I've been, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think I've been pretty positive about the show and the plot. There's been elements that we've talked about that have been like, I don't know that necessarily would have happened, but everything seems to hold up pretty well so far, wouldn't you say?
I would say that, yes, you have probably been more positive than I have. I know I had a problem with the last episode about the count. Mm-hmm. Right. You were not an apologist, but maybe an explainer a little bit. So I might be serving that role this time, it sounds like.
Well, I just and what I kind of hate to say this because the guy that wrote this episode. I want to say Brian Vaughn, but it's not Brian Vaughn. It's crud. I had his name right here in my notes.
Brian Miller.
Brian Q. Miller. Yes.
Brian Q. Miller. Yes.
Because he's written for a number of Smallville episodes. He's written for the comics with Batgirl and also for the Smallville comic. It's not like this is just some random guy. I mean, this guy is, television credits behind his name. But I got to say, there were just a number of conveniences into the plot and these things that just happened to just happened to happen to the characters in the show to move the story ahead. And I felt it was just, you know, it was just all too clean. It's like, well, really, how did that happen? Well, I mean, you know, okay, we're moving past it. All right, I don't have time to think about that now. But in going back and looking at the episode, the one thing, and usually, if I catch these on the second time through the episode, I don't bring them up because obviously the show kept me entertained and connected, so that any, you know, kind of gaffes or anything like that didn't stand out to me at my first viewing. But the stuff I'm going to talk about here, this is all stuff that really popped up during my first viewing. And, you know, so there was some, it basically takes me out of the show. It kind of breaks that fourth wall for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And those conveniences often do that. I find myself with that. I tend to overlook them most of the time, but every once in a while they do the same thing to me. So, you know, let's talk about them a little bit. And I will tell you right now, overall, as an episode, I actually enjoyed this one, and I didn't have a very big problem with some of these things. But
I enjoyed the episode because there were, you know, again, the stunt work and some of the action sequences really had me going. And I thought it was going someplace that it wasn't, which actually surprised me in a good way, because I was hoping we were kind of going to get a supervillain team up later in the episode. You know, it seemed like they were drawing the line so that we were going to have the Count and potentially Deadshot show up in this episode. And I was like, ooh, you know, this could be, wow, you know, two guys at once. That would be, you know, that would be difficult. Like, you know, how are they going to have that happen? But that didn't in this episode, obviously, like as you read about in the brief at the start of the show. But okay, so here are a couple of the things that kind of bothered me about the episode. So conveniently, Detective Lance thinks that Tommy's selling drugs or is having drugs provided to people in the club, and so he keeps questioning him, and he comes to Laurel's apartment during dinner and, you know, is kind of questioning him and just happens to know somehow that, hey, well, your books are $10,000 short. And Tommy, you know, he's not surprised by this or anything. He's like, well, yeah, okay. So, you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, so just really, you can just go as a cop and you can just see what someone's bank account is? Like, I don't know how that works. Like, how did he just happen to know the $10,000 missing? And, you know, and like Tommy doesn't bat an eye. I mean, to him, I'm sure $10,000 is like us losing, like, you know, a $20 bill or something like that. It's like, eh, you know,
$20. Jeez, I can't lose $20, man.
Okay,
I need that.
Maybe a dollar. A dollar.
That's like what, two Starbucks coffees or something.
Yeah, it is like two Starbucks coffees.
So I know what you mean. Here was my take on this, and I went back and watched it after you mentioned something just to kind of see if this is right. And you're right. It was pretty convenient, and I'm not sure if this is exactly what happened, but this was what my impression was. So, you know, to find out that the $20,000 or the $10,000 was missing, he was following a lead because the woman that died, that got hit by the car, had been in the club.
Okay,
then they found out that on her cell phone, she was the last person she texted was Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
Which he seemed very surprised about.
Sure.
His explanation made sense. You know, I mean, while she was trying to get into the club, and so she was texting him, he says he gets that all the time.
Sure. Can you get me in or score me in or something like that, right? I think
that's what her
message was. So it seemed like it could be taken as either getting her into the club or getting her the drugs.
Right, right. So you know, Detective Lance is following his leads. He's following the evidence. And he's already worried. You know, he's talking about this with that other cop that,
you'll
need to follow up on this. Yeah, the other detective. And he says, you know, no, I'll do it. You know, I just don't want to be more estranged from Laurel than I already am. And, you know, they go through that. But, okay, so he's following more leads. Now, he suspects Tommy a little bit, even after the text explanation. So he starts investigating the club a little bit. He finds the inspector who looked at the club before they opened was paid off $10,000. Okay. So when he found out that this inspector was paid off a lot, he goes to look at the club's books, you know, which I'm assuming the police would have access to if they're doing an investigation of some kind.
I guess that
was the leap for me. That's the one I'm like, oh, do they? Don't they? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think they'd need some sort of warrant and have to let him know first, but I don't know.
Right. Well, if you're a police detective and you know about this, you can always email us at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Let us know.
And if you're a police detective looking for us, please don't email us. But anyway, that was sort of my, I don't know if I'm apologizing too much for that. I'm searching hard, but that was kind of how I took that. How did he know that $10,000 was missing? Yeah. Well, he'd been doing investigating and it just kind of led him to that.
Yeah.
The next one, I don't have a good explanation for.
Okay. So this one is, Lance comes into the club and, says, "Hey, I need to look around." Tommy's like, "Great. As soon as you go get a warrant." And so Lance is like, "Rah, rah, 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 rah." And appears to come back later that night.
"I got your warrant right here. Here's your warrant."
And so he comes back with a warrant CD, I guess. But he comes back apparently a short time later. I guess it could have been the next day or something like that. But it wasn't like, a lot of time has passed because, everything was happening relatively quickly, it seemed like, in this episode. So we don't really have a good idea of the time, but it wasn't that long. Comes back, he's like, "Oh, I found out there was, I looked at the architectural plans and there's a sub-basement, so we need to check that out. And you let us in," and Oliver has no idea what's going on. He's like, "Okay, great." So Oliver's almost getting caught again as being the arrow. They go down to the basement. Tommy flips on the lights, and it's a bunch of junk, all the booze and stuff. And everything in the Aero Cave, all of the workout equipment that's up, all of the computer equipment, all of the medical equipment, everything gone. And we're watching it. My wife's like, "Oh, he had Felicity put it all away." I'm like, "No," because Felicity comes in and goes, "Hey, what's going on down here?"
Yeah.
And
"Hey,
Diggle doesn't
all my stuff."
Yeah, Diggle doesn't know anything about it. So how did Tommy clean up the Aero Cave all by himself? I mean, the dude doesn't really work, and that's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. I don't know. I don't have an explanation.
Okay.
And all I
the biggest
thing I could think of, and this is horrible. Now, this did take me out of the episode, but I think this was my own fault. So all I could picture was when they had Oliver by that little door with the code key,
he had
to go in. Yeah, I just kept wanting him to like jingle his keys, like Ace Ventura or something, so all the animals would put everything away or something. So or then I thought, well, maybe he has something where, the fancy electronics will hide like a secret door.
I was going to say, he enters a different code and it switches the door around the other way and he can go down the other side to, I was thinking some bat cave kind of thing.
All I know is that, there was some time in there and I know that he has quite a bit of stuff, but I mean, it really is just, some countertops with some equipment on it and, all of his parkour training equipment. So,
arrows and.
Right. But it's all kind of right there. I mean, it's not like an extensive bat. He didn't have a big giant penny from the bat cave or anything in there. So, I think that he could have done it. But he even dusted it up and put plastic coverings on everything. So, So it was kind of a stretch, but, I don't know.
Yeah, so
I don't have an explanation for that one, but it worked out for him. So
it just kind of took me out, and also the fact that Tommy seemed to be okay a couple episodes ago. He was like, he was pissed at Oliver, and then, "All right, dude, I understand exactly. We're both different people. We're going to make up." And now he's like cranky at him again, and it wasn't even really overt that Oliver was suspecting. I mean, it wasn't, I don't even think there was a scene where Oliver's like, "I think Tommy's selling drugs." It was just like some looks that he got, and Tommy went from like 0 to 60 over the entire episode, and there really wasn't any interaction with them about this issue until the very end. And then Tommy's just so pissed about it. He's like, "Fine, I quit." And you're like, It's just...
Yeah. I think we had talked about this a while back, actually, maybe mid season or before, about how, you know, we have our suspicions about Tommy being a bad guy eventually, just based on his character from the comics.
From the comics, right?
And we said, you know, we at least I kind of remember talking about how we didn't want to rush that sort of antagonist persona along too quickly, but it seems they're really kind of pushing him a little bit further toward the dark, you know.
Well, yeah, since this episode ends, I guess we can just talk about this here with him, you know, going back, basically apologizing to his dad, saying, you know, I don't need a big speech, I just need a job. And then they embrace, and I don't know if you noticed, they like had Malcolm Merlyn's eyes, or when he hugs Tommy, his face is kind of lit red from some like neon or electronics or something somewhere.
And I didn't notice that. I got to go back and check that out.
Yeah, it makes him, you know, just with the gaze that he's got, it makes him look a little evil there. I'm like, oh, yeah, all right. Hey, well, here's a bow and arrow set for your birthday. You know,
he gives him a little mini bow and arrow.
Yeah. So who knows?
So, well, I didn't notice that red glow. I want to go back and check that out, because I was so, shocked by just that freaky evil glare that when they pan the camera over, and just something about his eyes, and like, that guy's creepy.
Malcolm?
Because
he turns around, because he's showing his side, and he turns around in his swivel chair, and he just has that icy glare and that plasticky face.
And then he just kind of gets up and gives him this weird creepy hug. It's like when, you know, when Voldemort hugs Malfoy, you're like, whoa,
yeah.
not okay.
Not cool, right. Dude.
So it was, yeah, I'll say it again. He's such a good bad guy. I really like him.
He's doing a great job in this show. I agree.
I will say, you know, that this sort of, just bipolar attitude from Tommy, which, you know, quite frankly, it really could be, but it's a very, you know, I'll reference this again, and it's not in a bad way. I know that, again, we've talked about how sometimes they, people don't care for this kind of comparison, but it's a very Lex Luthor, Lionel Luthor kind of relationship, it seems like, lately.
Totally. Yeah. In the WonderCon video from just a couple weeks ago there, Guggenheim is asked about that from the interviewer, and he says, oh, I'm glad you guys picked up on that. So that's actually something I think he's going for. You know, so that's in his mind, as it should be, because, I mean, it's totally obvious, I think, if you know the Smallville show.
Well, and again, I'm a big fan of Smallville, especially, you know, the first, you know, five seasons or so, and that kind of interaction was so, first of all, very unpredictable, because it's so completely unlike the comics. And again, I think, like this in Arrow, it's so different than what you don't know what to expect, you know. So I think that helps the story along, and definitely helps the character development. Again, I just hope they don't rush it too fast. You know, I mean, Tommy is Oliver's friend, and I think they need to kind of keep that up a little bit, at least back and forth.
It's the balance of moving the story along, and, you know, okay, they know they've got a second season, but, you know, with television, it's like, do you really ever know when your final episode is going to be? So, you know,
no.
If they don't get to it soon enough, then they may not be able to get to it. So they really need, I mean, you know, here we are 19 episodes in, 19 hours into the show. So I don't mind that they're starting the wheels turning for this now. But
no, I don't either. I don't either.
You're right. It does. I mean, it needs to feel a little. It needs to feel organic, and not just like it's the writers going, okay, well, we've done four episodes of them being friends, and now we need them to be not friends. You know, it has to be a logical progression, and it feels like they're on track right now. So
It does. I think you just don't want, you know, that you want them to be friends, but it's not like the close buddy friendship like maybe we saw right even in like the first episode, right? And they can be upset at each other, but you don't need them to be, you know, arch enemies.
Yeah.
Right now. You know,
right.
Like they've got just kind of this tension. That's what you need.
Well, remind me later. I've got a Smallville question for you when we get to the flashback stuff.
Okay.
So, okay.
Well, my best.
But while we're talking about Tommy, though, I want to ask, Tommy says that they don't allow drugs in the club, Actually, no, I think Oliver says they don't allow drugs in the club. Tommy says he doesn't believe that there's, you know, anyone dealing drugs in the club to the detective. And then when Oliver says, you know, what, you know, are we? And he says, well, I try not to hire drug dealers to work at the club. So, but that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, people in the club that are, you know, selling to other patrons or, you know, bringing their own stuff in. So my question to you is, and Tommy denies that he, well, actually, I don't know that he actually ever does deny to Oliver that he's dealing drugs. He is affronted that Oliver makes a suggestion for it. But does he actually ever say that he wasn't? Because my question is he really involved in that and just not telling Oliver? Because there's the line, Oliver, you know, says, well, why didn't I know about this $10,000 payoff to this inspector? Because obviously Tommy feels that he is needing to protect Oliver. I mean, he hid all of his stuff from the, so that if when the detective came back with a warrant, he wouldn't find it. He has hid the architectural stuff so that, you know, nobody will inspect and understand that there's this arrow cave underneath the club. And he comes back to Oliver and says, you know, I manage your club. There are tons of things I don't tell you. And he's really upset with Oliver. And then they get into the whole argument because he doesn't know if Oliver's going to put an arrow in him as soon as he finds out that he's doing something illegal. You know, and Oliver's like, well, you really think I'd do that? But my question is, like, was Tommy helping with the distribution of this in some fashion? We never see who's in the car. It sounds like it's the count, and it probably is the doctor that's the, you know, ends up being the bad guy in this, Dr. Webb.
Right. Well, and the police do say that the woman that got killed got it from a coworker.
Right.
They say that right at the end there or something.
Okay.
But I don't think that Tommy was involved in the drugs, but it does seem like maybe he was doing some stuff he doesn't want Oliver to know, and not just the inspector, but maybe some other stuff too, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
What I really think is that they were kind of using that as a way to show that distrust and tension between Oliver and Tommy, because Oliver was so quick to believe that maybe he was involved, mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
So I don't know that he was involved in the drugs, but it seemed like maybe he was doing some other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And also maybe he's just saying something like that just to, you know, let Oliver know that, you know, hey, I really have changed. I'm being responsible for the club, and I don't have to tell you about everything that, you know, about all my decisions. It's, you know,
yeah.
You hired me to manage the club, and that's what I'm, you know, he's managing it to the best of his ability. So.
Yeah. It seemed like he was doing a pretty good job, actually, and he was. I was surprised that he quit at the end, but I almost thought that they had some good ways to make some stories about him covering up the arrow cave and Oliver, but that's probably not where they really want to go with it anyway. So
yeah, well, it puts you know everything again in a really tense area because. You know, Tommy knows the secret and so far hasn't shared, but now he's in with his dad and going to be working with his dad. And we know what a bad doobie his dad is. So, you know, there's just that always that element of, you know, is he going to slip and say something? Is he going to get really upset and realize that, you know, say something in the heat of the moment and reveal Oliver's secret or, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
So,
well, and
cool.
Oliver doesn't know about Malcolm yet. So,
right.
He probably wouldn't necessarily be worried yet, but
and Tommy doesn't know. Tommy knows that his dad has some skills, but doesn't know about that he's the Black Archer yet either. So.
Right now, Malcolm doesn't know about Oliver yet either, right?
Malcolm apparently does not know about Oliver yet.
Okay, all right. I was thinking. I think he almost found out, and then something.
Yeah, he was going to reveal the hood. Like he was going to pull the hood back at one point in the Year's End episode. I think when they were fighting in the abandoned building,
right?
Something Oliver was able to get out of there, or something like that. So
yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about this. It seems like almost every other episode now. Oliver and his killing spree. He wants to kill somebody, and then he doesn't kill them. And then he doesn't want to kill somebody, and he ends up killing him. And in this episode, he kills some guy, and then goes to kill another guy and decides, no, no, there's been enough killing today. It's like, okay. Great scene, by the way, with the three arrows. Let's just get that out of the way. Nice little trick arrow shot where the doctor says, you couldn't hit me with a single arrow. And, of course, he doesn't have a single arrow. He's got three loaded.
Pulls back three. That was good.
Yeah. So, but he kills the doctor. I mean, you know, basically in cold blood there. I mean, it's just like the guy's coming
out. He is coming up to him with a – he had like a needle of vertebra. Oh, no, a scalpel. That's what it was.
Scalpel, yeah.
So he did have a weapon, and he was coming up to him and, you know, assuming that Oliver was still completely, you know, stoned out on vertigo. Oliver had taken one of his, you know, medicine arrows there and injected it into
medicine
himself.
Medicine arrows, yeah, man. Woo, good stuff.
I think he probably assumed he could have probably gone right up to him, no problem.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been able. So, I mean, it was, like I said here, it was self-defense-ish.
Right.
You know, I mean, The doctor was coming after him, but I think Oliver probably could have gotten away. So it did seem like in cold blood, but you know, and I think I said this a couple shows ago too, that it only seems that the only times that he has killed people, you know, again, not that that's justified, but
yeah,
was when it was a life threatening situation for him or for somebody else.
Yeah. So you know what's interesting, though? Okay, so Oliver talks about how he should have killed the Count when he had the chance, because throughout the first two acts of the show, he feels that the Count's faking being crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and is the one that's actually behind all the dealings. And he's really upset with himself. He's like, you know, I made the wrong decision. You know, I failed myself. I don't know if he puts it that way, but... you know, he's really upset, and so he's like, I should have killed him when I had the chance. And it seems like ever since the second or third episode when he shot Deadshot, and you know, and it's like, okay, wow, okay, they killed Deadshot right off the bat, though they didn't. They haven't, you know, taken down any other bad guys. You know, he tries to take down the Huntress. She catches his arrow, you know, and escapes. He doesn't kill. The Count, though, he gives him an overdose. The guy should have been dead from that,
right? And they do catch him. I mean, the police
do catch him. Right.
So, he stops the bad guys.
He does. He stops the bad. Yeah, he stopped all the bad guys, and some of them. You know, there are a couple of people that he's killed along the way. And again, like you said, it's. I think we could probably look at each one of them and say that it's justifiable. I just again we're you know put up back to back here. With him killing a guy and then going in and he's ready to kill the Count. He draws a bow on him and, you know, is ready to just put an arrow through him. And he sees that the guy is just totally, you know, and, you know, just can't do it. So,
well, and, but see, now I think that was a callback to, the drug addict from the middle of the show there that was at the aquarium. Where, you know, and he says, he talks to, was it Diggle or Felicity? No, it was Felicity. He talks to Diggle about this before he goes to the aquarium. She's like, why, you know, why don't you just, you know, go shoot him? I mean, he's got all these hostages. He says, no, this isn't his fault. He says, you know, he hasn't failed the city. The city has failed him.
Good point.
And I think that's kind of a call because he's got the arrow pointed right at the Count's head.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Count just starts babbling. He says, you know, I wrote some stuff down here. He's like, you know, the Count's like the tombstone was is it got a name on it or is there a name on the gravestone? He says, no, it's blank. He just starts babbling some stuff, you know.
Let's see. I think I've got the quote here. It's looks like I'm the last one standing, sitting, spinning. Nothing what it once was. Is there a name on the gravestone? No, it's new and clean and waiting. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
Crazy.
and so, but see, I think Oliver sees there, he's like, okay, I, you know, I can't kill this guy. I mean, he's not, well, I guess he's not a danger to anyone anymore, you know? He's already stopped him. So,
see, this is where superheroes make all their mistakes. It's like, oh, we're not going to kill the Joker. We'll just put him in Arkham Asylum where he can meet with all the other supervillains and then escape again and
is
then
that
put him
just
back.
Like, the biggest mistake ever to not take out the Joker every single time.
I know.
But you're right. But it's also what makes them a hero. Right. It's also what makes them a superhero. It's they can't just kill. They can't kill. The older I get, the stronger I feel about a hero being someone who doesn't just outright kill when they have the ability to. Mm. So, and even, you know, even in the latest, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies that are so dark, you know, in the end of the second one, he does not kill the Joker,
mm-hmm.
even in that dark one.
Yeah.
So.
But. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's something I'm sure we will continue coming back to. I'm trying to, you know, get a grasp on this, I guess, internally, because he is such an aggressive and hot-headed. I mean, I think that's in the nature of the character. Even in the comics, Oliver Queen has always been kind of a hothead. He reacts a lot of the time before he thinks about things. And in the comics, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot more room to, you know, have him not kill characters. There's definitely killing and stuff going on. It's most of the time, you know, it's like you said, there's any justification if he does take out a bad guy or something like that. But mm-hmm. at least the way they're presenting it on the show, I think it's a topic that that we can keep revisiting here.
Yeah. So. Well, and ultimately, you know, when you are a vigilante. I mean, that's what a vigilante is doing, is taking the law into their own hands. And, you know, in a society where we rely on laws to keep us safe, you know, it's still against the law. I mean, he still has killed people, which I think is what Tommy is completely struggling with.
Oh, Tommy's freaked out about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. About the whole idea of killing. And he really has killed, whether they're bad guys or not. He has made the decision to take the law into his own hands by taking these people's lives. Yeah. He is the judge, jury, and executioner, and that's freaky. You know, that would be freaky in real life. So
yeah. The next thing I wanted to just, I think these are all great topics, and I don't think we can definitively answer that right now.
No,
so like
no.
I said, we'll keep coming back to that. So this episode, like probably 90% of the others that we've looked at this season, has the name of the episode in the episode. It's spoken at the end. I think it's Oliver talking. I believe it's Oliver talking to Diggle about having unfinished business with
Deadshot.
Floyd Lawton. Yeah, Deadshot. So, and this sets up this notion of unfinished business sets up a lot of the tension in the episode. So that kind of ends up being the theme for the episode. We've got unfinished business with Oliver and the Count. Obviously, as we just discussed, Ollie felt that he should have taken the Count down for the Count. Taking the Count down for the Count, right? Is that a good way to say it? You know, when he had the chance, because he believes that, you know, regardless of whether the Count is actually responsible for the vertigo that's being pushed back out in the city, which it turns out he's not. It's the doctor at the asylum that he's in. Yeah.
Well, it's the Count's liver that's
it
responsible.
It is, right.
Does
it
that
is. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He still is responsible. If the Count wasn't alive, they wouldn't have been able to extract the enzymes from his kidney or his liver or whatever it was so that, you know, they could synthesize the new, more dangerous version of vertigo. Okay, so that's one piece. Diggle's obviously struggling with this unfinished business with Deadshot, and we've been seeing this building quietly over the last couple episodes as Diggle's reading through newspapers and seeing that Deadshot is continuing to kill people around the world. In this episode, he killed a senator. So Deadshot has killed the president of Bialya and a senator now, as well as potentially a couple other people. So I think Diggle feels a level of responsibility for that in the same way that Oliver feels responsibility for people that are getting hurt by the vertigo drug.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely something there. And that still, before, even though the episode's over, that still is unfinished business because we don't have Deadshot in this episode. But it's great that Oliver kind of makes a vow and he sees that, you know, this other person on his team, this partner that he has, is struggling with this issue. And up until the end of the episode, you know, Oliver's like, you know, you need to focus because, you know, my what we need to do for me is more important. And he realizes, you know, even though he's finished what he needs to do, he's like, okay, well, now we finished what we need to do. I see that your stuff is really important, too, so let's go do that. It seems a little bit patronizing, but it's good to, that he at least recognizes that he needs to, you know, help out his teammates here as well.
Yeah, and again, I think he learned the lesson throughout the episode, you know, that, the unfinished business kind of idea. You know what? Diggle takes this as seriously as I was taking the count, and I can see that now, you know, so I want to be there for him. So
yeah, yeah. And then Tommy's obviously got some unfinished business with his father, as we've seen before, which there is sort of a resolution to that. I think he, whether or not he's really made up his mind, I think he's doing it more for spite at this point, but you know, I think he's a little hot-headed as well and is kind of rushing back to, you know, get a job with his dad just because it's like, well, I'll show Oliver that I can, you know, still do this without his charity or whatever. But obviously he and Oliver just have not been able to work out what, you know, what's troubling the two of, you know, the troubling thing between the two of them, which is Tommy knowing Oliver's secret. I mean, that's a huge, huge burden.
Yeah.
For anybody to take on. And, you know, it's not someone that's helping out on a daily basis. Tommy has no skin in the game. And knowing what he knows about the vigilante and the level of violence that this character goes to, I mean, can you imagine? It's like, you know something now, and it just happens to be your best friend, but you see all the stuff that's going on in the media, and knowing that this person is, you know, violent and kills people, and, you know, it's like, Tommy says, he doesn't know who Oliver is anymore. And Oliver's just like, I'm the same guy. And he's like, I don't know that. You know, it's like he can't unite or rectify his two views or his multiple views of Oliver. Like the Oliver, because he knows Oliver pre-island. He's kind of gotten to know him post-island. And then all of a sudden he finds out he's also this vigilante, which he has this entire, you know, 180 degree turn from anything else he knows about Oliver. So it's...
Yeah, well, and I'm seeing a lot of, it doesn't seem like quite as stable of a person, which it seems like a silly statement, but, you know, Diggle didn't really have any problem with this. Felicity didn't really have any problem with this once they found out. I mean, even the Huntress didn't have any problem with this, but, you know, Tommy's having so much problem. He doesn't seem like a very mentally stable individual, which makes a lot of sense if you see who his dad is, you know, and what he's gone through as he's grown up. So,
yeah.
So it doesn't seem to me that far of a stretch for him to have bigger problems with this than some of the other people that know.
Not entirely stable, huh? Is that what you're saying? I mean that's a good point. That's a good way to look at it. I haven't even considered that, because it's true. I mean, with the relationships that he's gone through in his life, to have somebody else basically lying to him the way that he's been lied to his whole life, you know, that's, you know, that could be the, you know, and it kind of seems to be here, the little thread that's going to unravel and push him away or push him over to the dark side.
It's not just a small lie either. It's a huge lie. So a lie that could, you know, potentially get Tommy in a lot of trouble. I mean, if you know someone that's been killing people, you are very responsible for that knowledge, and you're breaking the law too. So
right. Well, and then obviously the unfinished business with Detective Lance and Laurel. He's very concerned about, and I think it's great that he's actually thinking about this. He's like, oh man, I don't want to come down on her boyfriend again, which he's done a couple times. And I'm glad they actually address it in the show instead of just, you know, not having him realize that, wow, I keep seeming to target these people that Laurel, you know, likes, and I keep, you know, accusing them of doing bad things. And he actually is concerned about pushing his daughter away again. But he talks to her about it. I mean, he's honest and open. He's like, I'm coming here so some other detective doesn't, because I can treat this with kid gloves, but I need to let you guys know we're investigating this because this is really suspicious. And, you know, she's on your, you know, this woman that died is on your phone and I don't believe you. And there's all this other weird stuff that's going on and I can't explain it and I need to get a warrant. You know, but at least they have that little resolution moment at the end in the bar, which,
yeah, that was good. Was that where they were? Were they in a bar?
I couldn't
tell if it was Big Belly Burger or a bar. I think I was taking some notes and I looked up and they were sitting at a little bar area, so I wasn't sure. But
I think it's probably there was a bar that he was drinking in like episode 5 or 6, and after something had gone really wrong for him, and he was drinking and she came in and you know he was kind of sauced. So it was the same setup as that, except this time we find out he's just drinking Coke because, hey, he had a pretty good day. He didn't screw up his relationship with his daughter. His case worked out okay. You know, he didn't find exactly what he was looking for, but, you know, he didn't screw up royally. So,
yeah.
So that's interesting. So,
I like him. I like him, too. He's a good character, too.
He is really... Yeah, he's grown on me as a character. He does seem to be a little bit one note because, like I said, he keeps kind of accusing the two of the main characters of the show off and on with, you know, that they're doing bad stuff. But from their history and stuff like that, I mean, they even admit themselves. I think Oliver made mention, it's like, well, we need to, you know, investigate anybody who works in this club that might have been busted on drug possession. And Tommy says, well, you know, that includes the two of us, don't you? So, you know, they've had, you know, rough times in their past. They used to, by their own admissions, used to party pretty hard and they were involved with not a great group of people. So
even Lance said that was a long time ago for them. So,
yeah, over 5 years. So,
yeah. I guess that's a statute of limitation there. So.
Right. Well, so we're getting close to the end on time, but I did want to talk a little bit about the flashback sequences on the island. The, as you put it here, the Mr. Miyagi training sequences in the fuselage of the plane with the water slapping and everything like that. And, you know, just it seems to be one of those kind of classic training moments with the mentor who, you know, knows something but does, you know, asks the student to do something totally ridiculous like, oh, I just need you to, you know, I need you to paint my house. It's like, are you, I came here to train. It's like, well, we'll get to training in a minute, but I need you to paint my house. And this one is just like, put your palm out, slap the water. All right, slap the water again. And again, and he goes, now what do I do? And she goes, go fill it up and do it over again. And it's like, what? So, but we learn that Shadow is actually training him. And I thought the interaction between Shadow and Slade as kind of these two, as Oliver puts it, badasses, was really great. Great banter. You know, she's like, you know, it can take up to a year to perfect this. And he's like, we don't have a year. You know, can you do it faster? And I'm like, this guy is awesome. He's really cool. I'm glad he's going to be sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I like him too. And I like the fact that they're talking about him right in front of him. He's like, I'm right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. You know, funny moments because Oliver's being very kind of disrespectful in this training. And what's great, it shows, you know, where Slade uses his muscle and his might and throws that around, you know, when he's training Oliver, he ties him up and basically threatens to kill him to force Oliver, you know, to dislocate his shoulder to get out of the bondage to, you know, to get the weapon or whatever, or, you know, repeatedly beats him, in the training exercises. Shadow has a, you know, she is a very soft master, as opposed to the hard master, school that Slade's in. So it's cool. It's this very yin yang thing, very, you know, oriental training method. And, you know, she's teaching him to slap the water. It's a very Zen sort of thing, very repetitive. And you know, it's measured in very small increments, to what it's doing in the overall, course of his training. But, it's teaching him the patience and the skill, and basically I think it's helping, you know, him quiet himself so that he can do the training that he needs to. And we find out that this is, you know, a strengthening exercise so he can actually pick up and pull this bow that we find out, you know, it's strung at this very high amount of pressure, and he was too weak to pull it back at the beginning of the episode, which I don't know. I kind of didn't buy that either, but it's like, okay, fine, whatever. He's wearing the bad toupee now, so we know it's in the past and he doesn't, you know, he's not very strong or whatever. And so here's my Smallville question. So if this was Smallville, when he pulls back that bow, that would have been the series finale. There would have been 200 episodes before it, and then that would have been the end of the episode or the end of the show. Do you see that?
I think he might have needed to grow a goatee or something first, and then the end of the episode.
I could see
where you're going there.
You're
right. That would have been would have taken him ten seasons to get to that point. But
right. So I feel great that they put that in here so early.
So I will say, and I know that we're kind of running low on time, but and I'm sure this will come up again, but I want to kind of keep it in the back of your mind and think, I just, you know, I like the Shadow character, and I like the idea of her training him and stuff, but I'm not sure what I think. It seems very odd to me about her complete lack of concern about her father. But then again, you know, she's very shady. We don't know everything. She's shady. Shadow is shady. That's nice. Nice. She, you know, I still don't know what her involvement with all that is, and with fires and all that. So,
right.
just something to kind of keep in the back of your head to think about as this show goes on.
I think that she may just realize that. I mean, she obviously knows something else that's going on, but I think she may, you know, realize her father can take care of himself and has this point, because, you know, I think the first time we saw her, I mean, she was tied up. She appeared kind of weak, but like you said, there was this weird exchange and the hug and everything like that. So,
yeah,
there's something else going on, but it appears that she's going to be, you know, his archery mentor. Because she learned these skills, and she's got the she's got some of the yoga moves and stuff that she's pulling off. She's got some very graceful moves and strong core strength and stuff like that that I think she's going to try to impart to him. So
yeah, which the archery, her training him in archery seems to make a lot more sense than Slade.
Yes, because he's a sword master,
right? So, but you know what just occurred to me? The hug. Are they? You got that weird, uncomfortable hug theme going there. Maybe that's another unmasking theme that they're going to start using. Strange hugs between people on the show.
Oh, well, and speaking of unmasking, yet someone else learns Oliver's secret by unmasking him. Oh, look, it's Oliver Queen. All right. Well, dude must be crazy.
That's right. I forgot the doctor. So
it was convenient that he got killed. Webb. Yeah, it was convenient that he got killed, right? Because otherwise he would have blabbed. So, but.
Well, you know. took three arrows to do it.
yeah. Well, so some of the references we saw this week have to do with the Lila character we were talking about at the beginning of the show. We don't find out her last name in the show, but Mark Guggenheim, the executive producer, did tweet that Michaels is her last name, Lila Michaels. And in DC Comics, Lila Michaels is the alias of a character named Harbinger. This character showed up originally in the Crisis on Infinite Earth series in 1985 as the assistant to the Monitor, who was this kind of supreme being that was helping resolve the fact that all the multiverses were shattering apart. So he was trying to bring them together. So she is sent out to observe these planets as they're dying and observe them and bring judgment on them, and you know, that's, she's the harbinger of the bad things to come, basically. So we'll see how that fits in. Obviously this character's not gonna have superpowers or anything like this,
interesting use of that character as somebody on the Arrow connected to Diggle. I don't know, but we'll find out.
Right. She also mentions a group called Argus, A-R-G-U-S. In the comic books, this stands for the Advanced Research Group for Uniting Superhumans. On the show, again, Guggenheim tweeted the logo of Argus, and it because they don't have superhumans on the show, it stands for Advanced Research Group for United Support. So it's some sort of military organization. It's probably very much like S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Avengers and in the Marvel Universe. It's a relatively new group that showed up in within the last 2 years in the Justice League comics, and the most notable member of Argus in the comics is Steve Trevor. He is he's kind of the liaison between the government Argus group and the superheroes. So that's kind of cool that they're putting this, you know, other group in there, which you know, has government ties and boy, they could bring in all sorts of cool stuff with the Suicide Squad or with Checkmate, some other, you know, semi-government organized groups that have superheroes in them that are in the DC Universe. Task Force X is another one. I think they ended up kind of morphing into the Suicide Squad. So,
yeah, a lot of potential for characters that don't have to have superpowers,
yes,
but are closely tied to the DC Universe. So,
well, and what's great about the Suicide Squad is Deadshot was a member of the Suicide Squad. Amanda Waller ran that group. She was seen in Smallville. And I don't know that the Suicide Squad made it onto Smallville, but it's a group of bad guys that are basically given these suicide missions, but you know, they've got life sentences as it is. So this is kind of they'll never get paroled. So they get a chance to work with this group called the Suicide Squad, and they probably will not come back from their mission. So it's usually, three or four villains teamed up with like Rick Flagg, who's a kind of like army or intelligence officer, like a career intelligence officer, kind of like Nick Fury or something like that, and potentially a superhero to help, you know, lead the team and everything like that. So that might be cool. I could definitely see them bringing something like that into the show. So anyway, that's about all we have, I guess, for this week's this chock full week's episode of Green Justice.
Yeah, well, if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you let us know. Give us some feedback on iTunes. We'd love to see that. And you can also contact us by email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can visit our Facebook page. Please do that. We'd love to hear from you there. Facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, we really want to make sure that you tell your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.
Fear me more!
All right, well, thanks for sticking around to our spoiler section here. We wanted to just cover a couple quick things that we saw in the sizzle reel that we talked about a little bit earlier. You can find this on our Facebook page at Green Justice Podcast on Facebook, or just search for Arrow Sizzle Reel. I'm sure it'll show up on a number of different sites, including YouTube. So, Josh, what did you see in the sizzle reel that really caught your attention that they're going to cover in the last four episodes of the season here?
Well, I noticed some scenes that seem to take place in the far distant past, even before Oliver was on the island. It looked like some scenes with Robert Queen, mm-hmm. Maybe even talking to Malcolm Merlyn.
Yeah.
And then you know, one of the interviews, and I think it was with Stephen Amell, actually, where he was talking about an episode where I think he called it a way back flashback. Like it was even further. And I think he talked about, this wasn't in the sizzle reel, but he talked about scenes of, you know, being kind of the party boy and showing how he was before he left for the island. And then some other stuff, obviously, too. So that really stood out to me. And this is a reel.
Oh, that's cool. The thing that I saw that I thought was really neat, there was a scene with Thea and Roy Harper, and she's asking him, she's like, you know, why are you trying to do this? Why are you trying to track down the vigilante or the hood? And he says, I feel like I can help him. I need to get in touch with him so I can help him. So it leads very strongly to the fact that we're going to see Roy at least partner up and potentially be the next member of the little Team Arrow that we've got going on here. Whether or not he, you know, takes up any sort of weapon training or anything like that. But I could definitely see that, you know, if that happens for season two, having Roy, you know, be the new man on the team, and he gets Arrow training in the same way that Oliver did it. You know, we're going to see him slapping water or something like that in the season premiere or something. I think that might be kind of cool.
Yeah, and well, I mean, if they kind of go logically in the storyline, you know, I he would probably feel like he had some sort of you know, debt to him for saving his life, mm-hmm. in the episode where he got kidnapped by the Savior. So
yeah, yeah. So there's some really cool, exciting stuff there. And yeah, definitely the stuff with Robert and Malcolm Merlyn looks juicy. We're gonna find out more about the Undertaking. I guarantee it here in the last little bit, because they actually mentioned the Undertaking and the Dark Archer on the audio track for the sizzle reel. So. I guess we'll have to see. We've got a couple weeks here until the next episode shows up. So, and then it's four episodes till the end of the season. So, very excited.
Very excited. And hey, you want to check that sizzle reel out and some other things? Check out our Facebook page. There's a link to that there. You can check it out. So, and a lot of other great stuff too. So, make sure you visit our Facebook page.